Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I'm here. Let the bells ring out, the banners fly. It's too good to be true, but I'm here. You hold a feast your ears on me. That's from an old cartoon. Hi, I'm Bob. I'm so damn happy to be back in my own studio. I don't know quite what to do. It is Friday on the front porch. It has been a very long week. 2 days there at the Supreme Court. It had been a long time since I'd seen that many fundies and right-wingers and teabaggers. I don't know if I'd ever seen that many of them in one place. Whew! Golly Moses. It's the kind of... I mean, there was a miasma of stupid in the air out there in front of the Supreme Court a couple of times. I mean, there's a lot of good people there, too. Stupid, thick like gravy, you know, bad, lumpy gravy. And we, Ferg and I, saw more than our fair share of it. I'm tired. It has been a whale of a week. You know, we did our thing there at the Supreme Court, kindly hosted by our dear friends at Families USA, who provided us fascinating people to talk to, learn from. Then, after that was over, my colleague Bo Webb and I did some work on Capitol Hill trying to build awareness of the war that's being waged against hillbillies here in Appalachia. And I think we're doing amazing work, good work. But I would be kidding you if I said that it wasn't tough. It's tough and it's tiresome, and these trips are bookended by long drives. I got in just a little bit ago. I've been sort of jotting notes all mentally and voice notes and so forth like that all along the way about what I wanted to bring to the fore when we got back. We. What is this with me and we? Well, it's Ferg and me is what it boils down to, but when I got back to the microphone, I wanted to give you an idea of, there was some stuff that was on my mind that I felt like deserved some conversational time. And then while I'm driving home, everything changes. Every time I set out to be all nice and responsible and plot out an engaging 3 hours of radio, some right-wing jackass goes and just throws it all into chaos. Rick Santorum is the culprit today. But before we get there, just a little more of an overview of what we did. We've been working. Bo and I have been, and Ferg, who is turning into a fine advocate in his own right. And as Dr. John said on Tuesday, when Ferg went out to try to carry on sane conversations, a little spot reporting, as Dr. John referred to it, with teabaggers. Ferg came back into the broadcast area. I mean, his eyes were like coffee saucers. Now, Ferg has been known to sit down and play his fair share of zombie games. Our good buddy, Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, sort of put him on to zombie games. and Ferg enjoys them. But when he... I muted the mic for a minute because I hadn't seen that face on him in a long time. He said, "Dad, it's weird out there. It's really weird out there." And it was. It was. I mentioned this one goober that I got a photo of. The guy who, for the life of me, was just everybody. All the birthers were out in force. And some of them were captured photographically. But the guy that Ferg came to refer to as Snapple Guy really is baffling. He's standing there holding a handwritten poster that says, "Canada has national health care. It has a short growing season and cannot grow much food." Truly a message for the generation. Then, and I tweeted some of these photos. Then there was the lady, apparently Americans for Prosperity, or Americans effing people, the right-wing group that fronts all this astroturfery, these teabaggers, had their spell check brigade out. Obamacare is unconstitutional. And we'll let it slip that the N in unconstitutional looks a little bit like uncalstitutional. Uphold our freedom and liberty and rights. No socialism. Remember 10th Amendment. Only the word "remember" is an addition that has been written on white copy paper and taped over probably what is R-E-M-B-E-R, remember, 10th Amendment. There were lots of them. Stop Obama's subversion of the Constitution. No Obamarks care or Cloward and Piven spending. Justices, Judge Obamacare from the bench on this side of the Atlantic. Well, Barack Obama the dictator is not eligible to be president, i.e. his Social Security card, Selective Service card, birth certificate, all are forged. Like that. Yeah, I think Ferg got an education this week. But that was just Monday and Tuesday. We moved into the realms of advocacy for Appalachian communities on Wednesday and Thursday. On Wednesday, for instance, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to make sure that we were in D.C. early, taking the Vienna train all the way into D.C. Long ride, long train ride. And doing some talking and handshaking and explaining and hopefully a little bit of teaching. And when we got where we stayed on, from when we stayed all the way out in Manassas, Wednesday and Thursday nights, because Manassas is a good 25 miles from the first metro station you come to, which is Vienna Fairfax, and so hotels are a little less expensive. And we stayed there Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. And when we got there Tuesday night, I was outside taking in the pleasant night air. All of D.C. was simply a burst in color of various and sundry blooming trees, flowering crab apples and flowering pears and the like. It was, in fact, a veritable pollen party. People walking around D.C. going like they'd just gotten out of Studio 54 30 years ago. And I'm standing outside when I see this guy who has a whole tribe of kids, and he's trying to deal with them, and I feel some sympathy for him because I remember when ours were that little, and shoot, they're not that easy to travel with now that they're teenagers. Some would say it's even more complicated. But he was, you know, those little piston thingies that hold up your hatchback or your hood or whatever. Well, he was trying to get stuff out of the back of his monumental SUV people transporter. Florida plates. And it kept dropping as he was trying to haul stuff out. Meanwhile, he had a little toddler kind of grabbing him by the leg. Daddy, Daddy. So I said, hey, let me help you here. And I held the thing up for him while he got his stuff out. I'm that way. And it turned, hey, buddy, hey, you know, and then hi, and, you know, I'm Bob, and I'm Vince, and talking about driving around D.C. and blah, 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 and where to park, and, you know, they were going to go and do the sites and the memorials and the monuments and everything the next day. Okay, no big deal. All right. So I see him, I guess, Thursday morning, and he tells me how they had no trouble, and thanks for the help, the advice getting him around D.C., blah, 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 blah. And then this morning, I see him again. And this morning, all of a sudden, that hotel is awash in people carrying Bibles. And they, and you know, it's one of those motels where you get a free continental breakfast. You know, they've got a bunch of frozen microwavable pancakes and frozen microwavable turkey sausage and frozen microwavable gravy, and they put that out for breakfast, and you know, I was grateful for it, you know, a little something to get the day going. And I'm headed, you know, we're heading out, and now he's surrounded by all these people with Bibles, and I felt like I was in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. Think quick, Rabbit. But he so he says, "Oh, we're here for a Bible study weekend." And I thought, "Oh no, please God, let this cup pass from before me." And he asked me what it is I do. Prudently. I told him we were there to work on saving our communities from what, he says. And I explained to him what mountaintop removal is. You know, it's one of those parts of being a recovering Southern Baptist that you never get over the notion that you need to witness. Got to do some witnessing, got to testify a little bit. Yeah. So I explained to him what mountaintop removal was. And he said, "Brother, we're all here for Bible study. You know, our only common thread is that we all hate organized religion." I'm like, "Well, I'm right there with you, buddy." Didn't tell him the rest of it, but and so he says, "Well, I think we need a moment of prayer. We need to put this in the hands of the Lord." I'm just standing there. With a cup of melted brown crayon and hot water flavored decaf coffee and a plate of eggs with some Texas Pete over it, you know, to give them a little life, and a couple of turkey sausage patties. And it really is not conducive to me doing the whole, "Gotta go now, hear my mother calling, you know, gotta do my hair." So before, lickety split, There's that hand on my, one hand on my shoulder, another hand up in the air, and Lord Jesus, Bob and Vince, and we just come together, Lord Jesus, to ask you to help save his community and save it, and save his mountain, Lord. Hallelujah, amen. It went on for a little longer than that, really. And then it was nice knowing you. Glad you got around D.C. okay. Gotta go now. Well, if you're going to be here, you're welcome to sit in. I mean, we don't charge fee or anything. You're welcome to sit in on our Bible study. No. Got to get back to the hills. It may be blowing up a home by the time I get. Got to get back to the hills. Thank you, though. Thank you very kind. And off did I sprint. So he tells me the name of their ministry. And I guess it's sort of an the unaffiliated, non-denominational, whatever. But I can't help going and looking when I hear these things. And it's... At first I thought he said he came from Joe's Stone Crab and he had the Florida plate, so okay, hey, man, good eats, man. Maybe he's a chef. No, he's with Stone Kingdom Ministries. And so we get out of there and we get our bags out to the car and Ferg's in the co-pilot seat there. Jesus, take the wheel. And once we're out of the main DC-ish kind of traffic and we got our happy little right lane thing going and the cruise control's engaged and we're toddling along. I say, hey, Ferg. Yeah, Dad. Take the phone there and open up the browser. This is one of those moments when the technology's kind of fun, really. Take the phone there and open up the browser and look up Stone Kingdom Ministries. I'll bet you it's stonekingdom.org or stonekingdomministries.org. Okay, Dad. Yep, the Google's got it, Dad. Well, click on that. Let's learn a little bit about our buddies there. Sometimes I wish I didn't do that sort of thing. Sometimes I feel like I just need to stay home, and if the work wasn't so damned important, I would. What you were about to hear, I am not making up. Now, bear in mind that I took no small amount of my time to sit here and tell this dude, with whom I had developed a passing, you know, acquaintance there in the hall, in the hallways and the foyer of the hotel, and hey, good trip. Yeah, I saw the zoo. Oh, the zoo's fun. Cherry blossoms are beautiful. Yeah. And then so I sat there, and I should have got, you know, there was a clue.
Just a minute there, ma'am. I think we got a clue here.
There was a clue, because I tell him about everything that's going on. He says, well, you know, I hate Obama. This from a Christian.
I hate Obama. But his EPA's supposed to be helping with things like that, aren't they?
I said, man, that wasn't hateful. Doing missionary work, not trying to put people off the issue. Gotta have a big tent, gotta bring everybody in, gotta be inclusive. You know, because I'm liberal like that, progressive. And, you know. And I said, let me tell you something. Barack Obama is no more of a liberal than I am the Holy Roman Emperor. And I got to tell you, he shuddered a little bit at the phrase Holy Roman Emperor. I said, he's center to center right. And while his EPA has done a few things to help us, they did stop one big old mountaintop removal operation, but one of his own appointed judges just overturned that veto last week and said, nah, blow them up, boys! Which is what she did. If you go over and look at WVGazette.com in today's op-ed section, you'll notice an op-ed penned by my friend and my colleague, Bo Webb,
about exactly that. It pretty much captures the essence of the situation. But I sat there and explained to him that no, the EPA wasn't doing that much for us. They certainly hadn't stopped mountaintop removal. I explained to him, you know, that they take down thousands of acres and hundreds of feet of mountain for a seam of coal that's 12 to 18 inches thick. And that the poison gets into our babies and into our babies in the womb and into women's wombs and into our lungs and our hearts and our genitourinary systems. And I didn't know if you could say genitourinary to an evangelical, but I was willing to take the risk for the issue, for the movement. And he said, well, there's plenty of coal in other places. Why are they still doing that? I said, because it is profitable. And trying to speak the language a little bit, I said, for their God is mammon. And we are the sacrifices on that altar. Hand goes up a little bit, you know, a little praise. It's kind of like Twinkle Fingers in the Occupy movement. And Fundy's put the little hand up. Jesus, yes. So that's all the stuff that's swirling around in my mind as Ferg opens up StoneKingdom.org. StoneKingdom.org. And I said, well, just read to me what's on the homepage, son. And he says, well, here it is, Manassas IV. I said, that's a Roman numeral, son. There's no intravenous going on in Manassas 4, Spring 2012 Bible Conference. That's what we've been watching. And he said, and there's something here that says, danger of root canals, acid reflux, invisibility cloaks hit the big time. Government and jobs. EPA gets caught in a big fat lie. I said, stop right there. Read me that one. Ferg's done run off with his mama to the grocery store, so I can't have him read it to me or read it to us. So you'll have to just pretend that I'm Ferg for a minute. And he reads the following. The notion that the Environmental Protection Agency uses, quote, quotation marks, science, close quotes, to justify their regulations is false. Just like most of the claims they issue on various aspects of the nation's environment. Their favorite scam is to estimate the number of deaths they will prevent with some new draconian regulation. The EPA is the American equivalent of the Gestapo, a ruthless enforcement agency with a very green agenda. Really? The Gestapo was green? Who knew? I thought they wore black. Very green agenda that is opposed to the use of many beneficial chemicals, every form of energy, everyone, and the right of people to be left alone. Dad, it says it continues here. You want me to read? You want me to keep going? Oh, read on, McDuff, says I. At the top of its list of priorities is the destruction of the nation's economy with special attention to all forms of energy production. Manufacturing anything comes next, followed by afflicting the nation's vast agricultural sector. The EPA insists that dust is a pollutant. You can't farm without generating dust. Can't mountaintop remove without generating it either. And it's full of this really nifty, terrifying crap called P as in Paul, A as in Andy, H as in hellfire, PAH toxins, which stands for polyaromatic hydrocarbons, which are, it turns out, partially combusted hydrocarbons that go up in the air and then come down, and they're itsy-bitsy, teensy-bitsy, and they're so teeny-tiny that there's nothing inside the human body that can filter them or stop them. Or it ain't like pollen where, you know, you look like Studio 54, like I was talking about a couple of minutes. No, and it accumulates in your body. And then you go to the doctor one day, and they say, we've got to have a serious conversation. And you say, about what? And they say, about that cancer. Go on, boy.
To understand the threat the EPA poses, it is necessary to understand that proposed clean air regulations are based on the claim that global warming is real, is happening, and is caused primarily by carbon dioxide. The claim is utterly without any scientific merit. There is no global warming, at least not the kind Al Gore lies about. The North and South Poles are not melting. They gain and lose ice in a perfectly natural cycle that has been going on for billions of years. The polar bears are not disappearing. Drilling for oil in Anwar will have zero effect on the caribou, etc. With our vast reserves of coal and natural gas, the U.S. does not lack for the ability to generate electricity or to refine oil for transportation. If you want to stay warm this winter, you better hope that utilities keep producing the electricity for your home or apartment's heating system. 50% of that electricity is produced by cheap, abundant coal. And cheap. Because, you know, my kids' lives, my life, my wife's life, my friends' lives, my whole entire community, my region's lives. It's cheap, I tell you, cheap. You want to buy a watch? Me, I've been trying to figure out what it is that the creator of the universe was trying to get across to me with this whole little thing. Except maybe to tell me that I needed to go home and have some sacramental rum and with maybe a little sacramental Coca-Cola and a sacramental lime or maybe even a sacramental mint leaf. Relax for a little bit, sacramentally. Or even in Sacramento. Whatever. That's the, and all because I hit the, you know, down in the basement of the Baptist church, the little old blue-haired lady said, "Help your neighbor." So here's a guy who's struggling to get, who's apparently got six, it turned out seven children, and he's trying to get all of their crap out of a car that looked like the back of his car looked like the interior of Fibber McGee's closet. There's a reference you'll have to go to the Google for. And I just hold the damn thing up, trying to be the decent neighbor the little old blue-haired ladies in the basement of the Baptist church tried to teach me to be. Because it never struck me that it's a bad idea. But now I am beginning to wonder. Oh, I just got a photograph from our buddy Isaac. Of a mashed up front end of an automobile, and the front bumper tag says, "God is my co-pilot." Subject line on Isaac's email. Any questions? See? I don't go courting this. Oh, by the way, update, we had another screwed up McDonald's smoothie. I'm not going to tell you the whole story. There wasn't nearly as much drama involved as, honey, for some reason or another, we're out of the yogurt part of our smoothie, so your smoothie don't have no yogurt in it, but it's just as good anyway, trust me. The smoothie whisperer was not going to try to solve this one. We got back in the car quickly. Oh. And by the way, I should tell you that next week looks positively ordinary. And probably the week after that. There's a great deal of likelihood we'll be back in D.C. sometime around the... I'll probably have to leave here on the 15th of April for some doings there. I'm getting to where I can actually drive in D.C. traffic. I'm proud. But, by the way, you know, this Stone Kingdom Ministries webpage...
Of course, they're hustling gold. And I should mention to you that while he was laying hands on me and praying, he prayed for prosperity, that prayed that, that Jesus might make us prosperous no matter what happened. Just saying. Let's see, they're hustling therapeutic essential oils. Good Life International, LLC, Preservation of Wealth, Sportron, somebody's letter that tells people to put lemon juice on everything they eat and they won't have to take no purple pill. No more Breyers ice cream for me. The cancer time bomb sitting in your refrigerator. Will you stop consuming it? Breast cancer conference. One food you may be surprised to learn directly linked to breast cancer. Pasteurized dairy in the form of milk or milk products. Oh, Margaret. This one was a dandy. Professor Snape, beware, invisibility cloaks aren't just for the microscopic anymore. Using natural crystals, two independent research teams have designed carpet cloaks that can abracadabra 3D objects as big as an ant or a grain of sand seemingly into nothing. No, really. Consider this event from the life of Jesus, but he passing through the midst of them went his way, Luke 4:30. I've often wondered exactly how Jesus was able to pass through the midst of a crowd. Ferg is reading this as we're going down the road, and he looks at me, he takes a break, and goes, by running? We were trying to kill him. One possibility that occurred to me is, did Jesus use his supernatural power? Did Jesus use his supernatural power to make himself invisible? I don't think so. I think he used the Jedi mind trick. Jedi Jesus. I'm not the savior you're looking for. Hail Caesar, you're not the savior we're looking for. If he did, I do not contend that he needed to use something as crude as a technological device, but it is interesting that science seems to be on the verge of such a device. I won't bother you anymore with this. Well, there's the research department. Our buddy Bill. Hey, Bill, by the way, I got word for you. My pal Bo, with whom I've been traveling, is an old Cleveland guy. I said, you ever heard of Mr. Stress? And he goes, oh, man, he's awesome! So, you are known. Ron and Raleigh writing, Bob. Remember, no good deed goes unpunished, especially when dealing with evangelicals. P.S. No Google needed. I used to watch Fibber McGee and Molly on the little Emerson TV with the rounded sides when I was a little kid, 1959. See, that's even pre-me, but I had parents who talked about Fibber McGee's closet. Bill said I had to call my buddy Gildersleeve to explain what Fibber's closet meant. Yeah, it's nothing scary or anything. Patty writing in, by the way, she says, glad you're back and all's well. As for your stoner bros out there in the kingdom, that's K-I-N-G-D-U-M-B, they seem to be some type of conspiracy theory church, maybe. Just saying, like, as I was reading through, I saw quite a bit that reminds me of the good old Coke Sucker Brothers dad's organ, just saying. Like the letter from North Dakota stating they're building all the new homes in North Dakota with the heat that is run by the electric, because, really? BF&S. Love Patty, who's still scanning and a-giggling. I needed the smile. Thanks. And she follows up. Check out this. Well, let's see what it is. We'll just do this on the fly. Stone Kingdom Ministries. Ernestine Young. Let's see if we can find my buddy Vince. Because he was a preaching this weekend. Well, let's see what Ernestine Young has to say about the double portion, just to give you an idea of what I was dealing with.
Ernestine Young was born in Nampa, Idaho. She was instructed in the Kingdom Gospel by her mother and through reading many books by Dr. Howard Rand. How many of you are familiar with the works of Dr. Howard Rand?
Any kin to Ian?
Ernestine earned a B.A. of education and a master's degree in counseling and psychology at the University in British Columbia. She taught in the Vancouver area until 1979, at which time she returned to Idaho. When Frank Maldon resigned as pastor of the Church of the Covenant in Meridian, Idaho, Ernestine was asked to fill his position. She has faithfully done so for 31 years. Besides her ministerial and family responsibilities, she keeps busy in God's work, seeing to her tape mailings, traveling to various speaking engagements, and counseling many people who phone or write with questions, concerns, or problems. It is indeed an honor and a privilege to be acquainted with this dear and precious sister, Ernestine, and to receive instruction from her vast knowledge and understanding of the Scriptures. Ernestine Young.
Skip a bit, brother.
On the trip here, in the airplane, I met a lady who, interestingly enough, was from Nampa, Idaho. Nampa's not the biggest place in Idaho, although it's bigger than it used to be. And she was into homeschooling. Five children have graduated, two more to go in her family. And she was telling me that this question about what role women have in...
ain't got the patience for what role women have. Sorry, can't go there. We'll use this for light entertainment later. Okay, that's a good turn of phrase, John. That's a terrific tale. Told well. Fundy tribbles, that's what they all are. Fundy tribbles. By the way, John sent a little something along earlier today. I looked down and he said, Bob, you might have noticed an odd contribution just now. Today's my birthday. Happy birthday, John. Today's my birthday, and it's a buck for every year. I'd like to encourage folks who haven't contributed this month to join the Thrifty 250. Really, you did some outstanding broadcasting from D.C. this week on a super important topic, and this is the kind of conversation I'm happy to support. Thank you very, very much, John. And like I said, happy birthday. We can use the help, without a doubt. This is the last broadcast of March of this year, and, we're only about $800 behind the fundraising goal, but we'll hang in. But any help you can give is much appreciated. Uh-oh, magic word time. News Ninja Susan, Meridian, Idaho? Donald and I lived there for over 10 years. His son still lives there. See how the little connections happen on this program? I didn't know that. It's like the moving of the Spirit. Hallelujah, praise. I miss prayer meeting Wednesday. Cut me some slack. And there was the mention of, the conversation she was having in the aeroplane on the way over. That's the one that grabbed me. That's the one that made me sit up and say, you know what? I hate being away from the studio and the microphone. Because, when the guests start rolling in on the broadcast and everything, there's really not much of an opportunity to cover news stories, because you're there to talk to the folks that they want to talk to you. And if you caught the stuff from Tuesday, we had some technical difficulties with Monday, my apologies. But there were fascinating conversations on Tuesday. In particular, Elizabeth Weidrick on the Constitution, ultra-verified out there on the Twitter, thought she was particularly informative. as well as the conversation with Wendell Potter. And as I said to Mr. Potter, he is a hero to me for what he did in terms of waking up, leaving the swamp, and trying to sound the alarm about what insurance companies do to Americans and the means by which they profit off of our illness, our agony, our misery, our death. They were magnificent conversations. But along the way, I started every now and then with the radio, and of course it doesn't do that anymore. It's digital and everything. But I'd hear snippets or see on the TV and snippets of this story about this pilot. This JetBlue pilot. Now, I'm sure you know all about this by now, but it is still profoundly disturbing. Criminal charges were filed 2 days ago against a JetBlue pilot whom witnesses claimed had started yelling incoherently about religion and the 2001 hijack attacks and pounded on a locked cockpit door before passengers subdued him in a midair uproar. Now, the way it started was that he missed the crew briefing, and by the time he was aboard and they were up and flying and stuff, he started dimming the lights in the cockpit, talking about Jesus and how they were going to have to take a leap of faith. And the co-pilot thought, I ain't taking no leap of faith, Buster. I'm going to fly this thing to Las Vegas like I'm supposed to. So he said, why don't you go back and check on the passengers and crew and make sure they haven't raptured or anything. I'm sure he didn't say that. But why? And the minute he left the cabin, the co-pilot locked the door, shut it, locked it, dogged it, and they made an emergency landing in Amarillo. Now, here's the thing. In America, we're not supposed to discriminate against people based on their religious beliefs. And that is generally a good thing. Presbyterians not welcome here. But we've got a lot of people out there who are itching to discriminate against people for being the wrong religion, as long as the wrong religion happens to be Islam. But this was no Muslim pilot. This wasn't a Jewish pilot, a Hindu pilot, a Jainist pilot, a Shinto pilot, a Zen pilot. This was a good, God-fearing, upstanding American pilot. Hooting around about Jeebus. Talking about all sinning being committed in Las Vegas. Oh! And I was particularly fond of this this passage from the news story. This is from the Reuters account. The FAA said it was investigating the JetBlue incident. It is not yet known what may have caused the outburst described in the affidavit. No, it's not. A guy's ranting and raving about Jesus and leaps of faith from 40,000 feet, and you don't know what caused it? Religion caused it. Magical thinking caused it. The Federal Aviation Administration said Osborne's, that's the pilot, Osborne's last medical check was in December, and there were no prior incidents, accidents, or disciplinary actions on his record. As a captain, he would be required to undergo at least 2 medical exams within the past year to access his capabilities to fly, but the physicals required by the FAA and conducted annually for most and twice a year in other cases are generally less rigorous. But no, there was nothing there to alert the FAA or JetBlue. He's in midair and he's on the radio. Tower, be quiet. We must have quiet up here. I've dimmed the lights.
We're taking a leap of faith to Las Vegas.
Oh!
See, that's another one of those places that's heavily reliant on science, that business of flying heavier-than-air aircraft through the sky at pretty quick speeds between places like New York and Las Vegas. You know, it relies on engineering principles and physics and lift and stuff I don't understand and equations that involve the Greek characters like mu and nu and chi and I guess. You can't pray your way from New York to Vegas. But they don't know. They have no idea what would have caused this guy to become a danger to the entire to the entire aircraft, crew, and passenger alike. They have no idea, even though he was raving about Jesus, talking about faith. And I only say this because, you know, this has happened before, and there was no doubt about it when the Egypt Air guy got out over the Atlantic and started talking about Allah. Well, we all understood that he had gone religiously insane and decided that it was time for a bunch of people to go to paradise and get their 72 Virginians. But, you know, that's Islam, and they're like that. Christians? Well, Christians are normal. And one of the more... You know, this is reflected in a proposed bill in the legislature of the state of Tennessee, where the Eagle Forum, that's Phyllis Schlafly's group, go to the Schlafly cutoff and get out and cut off your Schlafly. I've gone from Fibber McGee to Johnny Carson now, so you know where Friday's headed. The Eagle Forum of Tennessee has authored something called the Putting Tennessee First Act. What does the Putting Tennessee First Act do? The Putting Tennessee First Act limits students' access to qualified, competent teachers in the charter schools of the state. Putting Tennessee first in what, Edith? The Putting Tennessee First Act says that the state's chartering authority may not approve schools where more than 3.5% of their staff is made up of immigrants, even if they're legal residents of the United States. Because the Eagle Forum wants to reduce the number of visas available to foreign-born workers and opposes the use of textbooks that it sees as favorable to Islam. Here's an idea, and I know it's going to seem crazy. What do you say all our textbooks are neutral as regarding any religion? Gee, I think that would work nicely. You know, you don't even have to go so far as to satisfy me and say all religions are lunatic. You can just be neutral. You know, there's a lot of Muslims in the world. There's a lot of Christians in the world. A lot of Jews in the world. There's a lot of Hindus in the world. And they all believe stuff. Next chapter. But no, that won't do. The Eagle Forum describes feminism as the most destructive force in our society today. No, they want to make sure that they're there won't be any foreigners teaching it, because, you know, the next thing you know, them foreigners, they come over here and believe in all kinds of crazy stuff, like Islam and evolution and Islamic evolution, and, well, you know. You want to know how crazy this bill is? There are members of the Republican Party in Tennessee who think this is nuts. There's a senator named Stacey Campfield says he has no problem with foreigners teaching in schools if they're here legally. Another Republican said that, well, you know, these limitations on who schools can hire will hurt students themselves. Go figure. Airplanes. Fundies. Jim pointing out, hey, like Major General Jack D. Ripper, the pilot was as mad as a March hare. That's what we need, Jack, a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code. Oh, yes, you said, feed me, Mandrake, and I was there feeding you. That's what we need, a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code. Cold water on the back of the neck and the code. No, but Jim points out, they do not do psyche evals on commercial pilots, just physicals twice a year after a certain age. One a year for the younger ones. So, if Doc Danica was sitting there evaluating pilot Osborne, and he said, well, you know, my trick knee's been acting up a little bit lately, and Jesus has been telling me to crash the aircraft. You mean Doc Danica would just look at the knee and then... Bill noting, hey, this is just the reason to arm pilots. Going back to the trip to D.C. and the Affordable Care Act, by Tuesday evening, it had gotten pretty grim. This in response to a question from John, do you have any thoughts on the SCOTUS hearings to share? Obviously, I didn't get to go into the hearings, but people were coming over who were talking about how... obvious the right-wingers on the court were making what their positions appeared to be. And, of course, it was fascinating that in all this right-wing brouhaha over activist judges and legislating from the bench, lo and behold, here were a bunch of right-wing judges who looked like they wanted to do exactly that and supplant the will of the Congress. You know what? Because one Congress passes a law and you get a new Congress that swears it hates it, is no reason for a Supreme Court or any portion thereof to think that they get the right to do what Congress... No! No, this is the central thought that struck me out of it all. Was it wasn't so much what I was hearing as what I was not hearing, because I was hearing a lot about and the coverage later in the day, NPR, whomever, you know, was talking about how hostile the judges were to the mandate and the act in general. And I'm sure they would, you know, because after all, why would John Roberts or Alito or Scalia or Slappy Thomas give a damn whether, you know, some fat old, nearly 50-year-old liberal radio host can get his diabetes test strips? What the hell do they care? Or anybody, yeah, or whether anybody else can, for that matter. I'm just being enlightenedly self-interested here. No, here's what occurred to me is that out of all of it, there is a principle. There's a principle that is supposed to come into play going way the hell back to, like, McCulloch versus Maryland and Marbury versus Madison. You know, back behind the Supreme Court building, there's something that's called the John Marshall House. It's where John Marshall lived. And I stopped and I looked at Ferg and I said, read that and understand where you are. And we talked a little bit about the foundation of the court, and I explained to him about what Marbury versus Madison means. That's where John Marshall said that the Supreme Court will be the final arbiter of what is and is not constitutional in this country. And he did it in such a way in Marbury versus Madison that nobody could bitch about it. But hand in hand with that principle is that the court, in reviewing acts of Congress and acts of the administration, cannot just look at it and say, you know, because, see, John Marshall despised Thomas Jefferson. They were cousins. And neither one liked the other. Jefferson was kind of standoffish and bookish, and
And he was, I guess we would say now that he was sort of nerdy. He was brilliant, but he was a man of contradictions. And on the other hand, John Marshall was urbane and witty and brilliantly intelligent. And they, like I said, they were cousins. And you ever had a cousin that you don't like? Because when you've got a cousin you don't like them more than you don't like other people. Because it's like there might be a little bit of their blood in your veins, and well, we probably ought not to talk about that either. But John Marshall said that, if I recall my cup of coffee in law school correctly, John Marshall said that in judging the constitutionality of government action, especially legislation, that great deference was to be given by the court to what, and this is a principle of construction that comes down, you know, more than 200 years now. That the court must, not kinda oughta, maybe if it's a day that ends, that has an R in it, but no, that it must afford great deference to the decisions by the legislative branch. And that they are not to be disturbed unless they are clearly unconstitutional. Now that kind of language means that you can't just look at it and say, you know, it's socialism. Or some other teabaggy phrase that Mrs. Thomas has been whispering in Slappy's ear at night. You can't do that. But there they were, doing it. Roberts did it. Alito did it. Scalia did it. Slappy did it. Kennedy did it. Meanwhile, people like Breyer and Sotomayor and Kagan and Ginsburg were saying, excuse me? Pardon me? Deference? And that's what I noticed being absent from it all. Because if this was a right-wing piece of legislation, the rats on the court and Kennedy would be falling over themselves talking about how they owe the legislative branch great deference and to make presume that and no judge should ever be thinking about legislating from the bench. But because it's a statute that will afford health care to some 11 million working poor people, because it's a statute that has largely closed the donut hole, because it's a statute that is allowing young people to be able to stay on their parents' insurance, and all of these by the millions, well, damn. And you heard the kind of quotes that, so, for as much as, Rick Unger, who I talked to on Monday, manifested, he said he wouldn't be surprised if it was a 8-1 or a 7-2 decision in favor of the act. And for all his optimism, I think this is a shamefully partisan court that doesn't give a good goddamn what they do, as long as they do the bidding of their corporate, not masters, but owners. Pure and simple. Lordy, we got so much to do this evening and so much conversating, and stuff we haven't touched on yet. Let's just do this real quick. I was on the road. We had stopped for lunch at one of the local Waffle Houses. Ferg has a thing for Waffle House, and it's among the cheaper places you can eat along the road. And so I was checking my email when I got this email in from our buddy Michael, Kid A from the chat room, who was coming unglued. Over this latest thing by Rick Santorum, speaking in Wisconsin yesterday. And I guess it's a little bit like slowing down the Zapruder film to try to figure out where the second gunman was or whatever. But listen to this audio from Rick Santorum real quick and just tell me what you think. We might have to replay it a couple of times.
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war government, America was...
Did you hear what I heard? The anti-war government nig... I didn't say nigga. That was nig. The Santorum campaign has said that they will not dignify the assertion that he was just about caught saying the magic word. You know, if you have been listening to this program for a very long time, you know that since about 2008, I have said that it's coming, the day is coming. And all the strain and all the stress is just gonna pop goes the weasel one day, and the word is gonna come out. Here it is. Now, I don't know what a government nig is. I even went so far as to go to Yonder Dictionary, the hard copy version, and look up words that began with N-I-G. And I couldn't find any nouns that would fit as having been modified by the word government as an adjective. Because, you know, I'm all funny about English that way. One more time.
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war government, America was a source for division around the world.
That man done got flustered. Darn near said it. Of course, you know where my mind goes. You know what I thought of immediately.
Hey, the sheriff is a nick.
Police, the sheriff is near.
No, God blame it, James Lewis. The sheriff is a nick.
Blazing Saddles. Yes, of course. Says the sheriff's near. This ain't far from it, is it?
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war government, America was a source for division around the world.
You tell me. Because remember when he was caught saying that he didn't want to help black people? He said that that was actually black people? What's this? I'll take racial epithets for 500, Alex. Breathtaking. Goes on. I know, Ron. Speaking of old Jack D. Ripper, Ron and Raleigh, I think it's time to get old something to drink. Bourbon and rainwater should hit the spot. If you wanna go the real safe Jack D. Ripper route, it's grain alcohol and rainwater, Ron. Oh, I understand, Ron. Yes. Hey, Bob, he was taken out of context. I'm sure he didn't mean what he said. Are you going to believe your lying ears or the Honorable Rick Santorum? Yeah. No, it was a very long week, but it was a very happy week. I was thrilled to get to hang out with Mike Malloy a little bit and Tara, who came down from New York City. Of course, she runs RepublicanDirtyTricks.com and a Facebook page that you should all run out and like if you do the Facebook thing. She's posted some photos from the radio row, mainly of Mike. Glad I am of it. Wasn't looking too photogenic this trip. I looked at one Jesus Christ, when did I turn into Orson Welles? I ain't near as handsome as Orson Welles. Certainly not as handsome as Raymond Burr, but equally as big as the both of them, it would appear, from photographic evidence. Now, we had a wonderful time, and it's always great to get to see Mike, and we had some wonderful conversations over dinner, and he's just the consummate pro, and it's a joy to watch him work. Unflappable, unruffleable, pure pro. But Lord help me if I don't feel like I need a vacation. It's Friday on the Front Porch, and we're going to go to your calls and your conversations straight away here. 5 minutes past the hour. Take a little break and come back. Yeah, I need a vacation. If nothing else, we'll play some vacation music. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Rather sorely in need of the support part of that just about right now. This is The Horn. Me, I'm Bob Kincaid. Zach Brown Band.
Gonna put the world away for a minute. Pretend I don't live in it. Sunshine gonna wash my blues away. Had sweet love, but I lost it. She got too close, so far, and now I'm lost in the world trying to find me a better way. Wishing I was deep in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze, and it don't seem fair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. Wrote a note, said be back in a minute. Bought a boat and I sailed off in it. Don't think anybody's gonna miss me anyway. Mind on a permanent vacation. The ocean is my only medication. Wishing my condition ain't ever gonna go away. And now I'm knee deep in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze blowing wind through my hair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. Champagne shore washing over me. It's a sweet, sweet life living by the salty sea. One day you could be as lost as me. Change your geography. Maybe you might be in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze blowing wind through my hair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. Come on in, the water's nice. Find yourself a lip slice. Grab a backpack of lies. You never know until you try. When you lose yourself, you find the key to paradise.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Cool Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Cool Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Oh. Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Cool Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed, hour two, 11 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. It's really a live program. It's Friday on the front porch. I'm Bob Kincaid, and it would probably be wise for me to stop filibustering. I just had to tell you some of those stories. It's just, it's crazy. It seems like I leave home, and the weird closet opens. Bats and spiders and snakes and fundies and Christians all come crawling out of it. And just make him, Lord, just make him prosperous, even if they do blow up his community and give his children horrible diseases. Prosperity is the key, and we ask it all in the name of Jesus. Amen. Phew! I'll tell you what. Right to the phones, but a couple of notes in. Our buddy Andy in California says, most pilots come from the U.S. Air Force. A great training ground for flight and far right-wing evangelical indoctrination. The surprising aspect of the JetBlue pilot affair is that this doesn't happen more often, because the zoomies from the Air Force Academy, many now commercial pilots, are in many cases not only brainwashed with evangelical thought, but verifiably nuts. I don't fly JetBlue. A few years ago, I missed a flight due to New York traffic, and the company would not reimburse me or give me a ticket voucher. Just took my money. Regarding the rats on the Supreme Court, unfortunately, I think you're correct. The health insurance mandate will most likely go down, and those judges don't give a damn, like Republicans, how many Americans die because they lack access to health care. Doesn't bother them in the least. The rats have delivered to their corporate masters, and that's all that matters. The Koch brothers and their top 1% minions will be toasting champagne in June. This is mission accomplished. Our politicians don't represent the American people, nor does the Supreme Court. An untenable situation for the citizenry. And I have to tell you, thank you, Andy, thank you. I have to tell you, I was particularly moved by what Wendell Potter said to me, and that is that the insurance industry does not want the Affordable Care Act to just go away. They don't want the whole thing stricken down. They just want anything that has to do with limiting their conduct and their generally bloodthirsty bad behavior stricken down. And what he pointed out is if we get some sort of piecemeal meatball surgery version of the Affordable Care Act, where they cut out the mandate and they cut out the ability of government to actually speak on behalf of the people and tell insurance companies that they can't behave like bloodthirsty monsters who are concerned only with profit. Because, you know, there's stuff in there about profits, too. And limiting it. And the Medicaid stuff that's in there. And holy cow. If they can just get their bad behavior or any limits on their bad behavior removed, but maintain, well, it kind of guts the act, but leaves them a fertile field in which to play. So you get the idea. Jeanette in Minnesota, you'll be glad to know I'm at least reconsidering my support for Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers on this one, because I found out the federal community first choice option for Medicaid is tied to the Affordable Care Act. Yes, it is. And that's why I say that, bless their hearts, on the many other things that I agree with them about, Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers are dead wrong about the Affordable Care Act. Jeanette says, regarding Santorum, it would not surprise me if he does say it someday, but it doesn't make sense in that context. Anti-government, anti-war government N-word. No, it doesn't. That, nothing does. But the thing is, you have to understand, it was kind of like speaking in tongues for him. It was word salad. And when the lizard brain starts doing word salad, the prejudices will bubble up. Jeanette notes maybe he was trying to say something about Obama being negative about the U.S. Remember the brouhaha over Obama supposedly apologizing for U.S. actions during the Bush administration? Then why not say negative? Because I'm pretty good at vowels, and that was not neg, that was nig. Maybe the fact that he got tripped up did cause him to almost say the N-word. Who knows? The thing about blah people was complete BS, though. No doubt to me it was black people. She says, my sister and her family love the Zac Brown Band. To me, all their songs, or the few I've heard, sound the same. They don't exactly. They're not. No, maybe they're written in the same key, but maybe they're about a lot of the same things. Fun things. Happy places. Warm sunshine. Toes in sand. Ass in sand. Toes in water, ass in sand. Things that appeal to me right now, having been laid hands on earlier today. You know, it's a blue shirt, but I swear I'm going to bleach it just to get the fundy off. But I was being open-minded. I was thinking, you know, maybe these people are, you know, and they're just, you know, harmless, evangelical, you know, daisy chain, peace-loving, because those kind of Christians are out there, and I like them. But then going down the road, what do I find out? Yeah, you get the idea. You know the story. And, of course, this from Darlene. Don't forget, Bob Scalia made it pretty clear that he and probably many of the other justices didn't bother to even read the Affordable Care Act. I kind of have. You know that comment, he said, you expect us to read these 2,700 pages? Well, you are being paid and everything to do that, judgy-wudgy. You know, there was a woman in a white coat standing on the sidewalk out in the front of the Supreme Court who claimed to be a physician who said, if the Affordable Care Act passes, your brother won't be able to get a PSA test. They'll be illegal. Your mother's mammogram will be illegal. She's going to die now because of Obama. It's socialism. I should keep my mouth shut, but I looked at her and I said, madam, are you telling me that the Affordable Care Act makes prostate-specific antigen tests illegal? It makes it illegal for doctors to order them. I said, madam, I have read the act, and it does no such thing. We can have a debate about the merits, on the merits of the legislation, but that debate can never have any validity for so long as you remain a liar. Please stop lying. Please stop being a liar. And turned my back on her and walked away. But I felt better, right? Hey, welcome to the program.
Crayola coffee's a hell of a product.
Oh, yeah, but it don't taste so good.
It's a little bit of a food porn since you mentioned that. I noticed when I went in a restaurant that this restaurant went over to our table four times and pressed us on dessert. So I looked at the menu, and it was sponsored by Bailey & Co., and I said, man, they must do this to every single person that come in here.
Sponsored by who?
Bailey & Co. Irish Bailey's.
They
do a brand of dessert, too. And it if we weren't nice people, we would have, like, reported it and said, you know, this woman pressed us on getting this this dessert, but we didn't do that. But, I mean, it was really, really to the point of, like...
Lay off with the dessert hustle already. No.
So, yeah, that was something that really kind of surprised me regarding the food porn moment. Before we start, we should mention that you need to give out the email and the contact address for proper fundage.
Absolutely. BobKincaid@gmail.com. And if you log into your PayPal account, thank you, David. Mm-hmm. If you log into your PayPal account and just do the send and use BobKincaid@gmail.com as the send address, and click personal and gift, that means none of your kind contribution will be consumed in transfer fees. So BobKincaid@gmail.com is the address. And, of course, the phone number for reaching the program, although we have many blinking lights right now, is 877-443-2366 or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. How was that?
That was good. Better than great.
Awesome.
So a little bit of a funny story or a funny mention before I get started onto the serious news. I was looking at this story, and the title said, did a sea monster, this has to do with what you were earlier talking about, did a sea monster wash up on a South Carolina coast? And the first comment is, it's the Obamacare bill. Big, bloated, stinks, and dead.
Oh, Jeebus.
And then, I can't even tell if this is sarcasm, but I don't think it is. It says, I'm sorry, Gary, the flag is great, but you need more eagles and 9/11 references if you really want to get across to these communist liberals. And communist liberals is in capital letters. But this is the thing that really, this is the thing that I called about regarding what you were talking about earlier. So this guy from a college, and I will reference that he is not a white teabagger, and that's all I will say regarding this. And this is why I say it's inevitable. It's completely seeped through our whole system, Bob. Our whole cultural system is ingrained in this, and it's really embarrassing. But he says, are we really that dumb to believe that this sea creature is a sturgeon? He spelled sturgeon wrong. Is
a sturgeon?
Yes, yeah, sturgeon. Evolution theorists always label a sea creature a monster as a fish or something, because they know if they admit that sea creatures exist, it would totally destroy the false evolution theory, Big Bang. The Bible makes it clear that dinosaurs and sea creatures existed with humans, Job chapter 40 and 41. And then some guy tries to enlighten him and says, you are the biggest joke ever. I understand sea creatures, but dinosaurs? Where are the dinosaurs then? Well, he shouldn't have answered that question, because then he said, you missed the key word in my comment, existed. Well, there's two types of scientists, evolutionists and creationists. And according to creation scientists, most dinosaurs were washed away during floods of Noah, and the flying dinosaurs were killed off during the Viking era and Dark Ages. The archaeology evidence proves that Vikings killed dragons and placed their heads on the end of the ship for show.
Oh, stop it.
No, I'm not making this up. And there are numerous fossils and castles that was found with paintings and engravings of humans, knights slaying dinosaurs. So don't believe everything you read in the school textbook. The word dinosaur was first used in the 1800s. Before dinosaurs was called dinosaurs, the world called them dragons. The Hebrew and Samaritans called them dragons. But we downplay the word dragon as if it's a mystical creature.
Greeks called them cyclops.
Yeah, right. Evolution is a load of lies. Nothing scientific about evolution. The fossil record is based off assumptions and ideas, bones with red blood cells in them. And if a fossil has red blood cells, it can't be millions of years old. Google dinosaur fossils with red blood cells, and you'll see I'm not saying dinosaurs are walking the earth, Jurassic Park. I was saying that they coexisted with humans before the flood of Noah, and then the rest was killed off throughout our time. And then he says, he closes it out with, Jesus loves you.
And his baby dinosaur.
Yeah, that's what I mean by we are so wrought with this kind of teaching. This is true indoctrination, and this is true dangerous indoctrination, because you can't argue nonsense.
No, it's like the woman I turned my back on. Some of that crap you just walk away from. You can't fix stupid.
It occurs to me that this is the same thing that is happening regarding every single issue. My parents are dealing with constant emails of why Obama is a quote unquote Marxist. The health care, it's just constant, and basically they answer them back and they say, So you'd be happy more? You think the Republicans would be better? And their answer is usually the same. No, but we got to get rid of Obama. So tell me if that makes does that make any sense whatsoever? But that's exactly what we're dealing with. And you see, this is why I try to tell progressives and liberals, that's all that matters, getting rid of someone. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter what you say regarding any of
it. Well, and that's the position taken by the politically naive and the political... And see, that's why so many of the teabaggers are... So many, majority of, entirety of, are, where political science is concerned, infants. I mean, they're not even... They're not even ready for Zwiebax, okay? They are newborns. And that speaks, and you know, it's across the spectrum, really. Yeah, just vote the bums out. You know, there's one idiot walking around in front of the Supreme Court with a big sign that said, no lawyers in government.
You know, we can blame, I was looking at the media and they were already revving up on MSNBC. And I put this fully scope on the media, full stop on probably about 75 or 80% on the media, and they were already talking about when is Mark Rubio going to announce to be vice president?
Oh no! I was listening to Malloy the other night. I understand the skinny on that now.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. It made so much sense to me. I was almost fearful. It makes too much sense. Malloy remarked that the Bush family never does anything that they don't have some sort of a deal going on. And to that end, it would not surprise me one iota for Jebby to be the vice presidential nominee of Willard. Because Willard's had two shots. This is Willard's second shot. You don't get a third bite of the apple. You don't
right.
get a third grasp at the ring. So if Willard can't do it, then Jebby is perfectly positioned, having been a legitimate running mate, you know, not a Sarah Palin or anything, but a legitimate, so-called legitimate running mate. He's perfectly positioned for an empty White House in 2016 when even the Democrats won't likely run Joe Biden.
Well, the other thing is that the Republicans do need someone like
because that. Rubio is too damaged. His whole bullshit story about his parents being persecuted by Castro, blah 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 blah, total crap. I mean, it's been sussed out and smoked out, and Rubio has baggage that takes steamer trunks to carry. More and more. Had I the dough, I would I'd make that phone call to the UK and say, you know, get me a couple of pounds on Jeb Bush as the, you know, because UK bookies will take any kind of a bet. Get me a couple of pounds on Jebby as the vice presidential nominee of Willard Romney.
So are you on the same page of what Brad Friedman also says about the that we're headed for a brokered convention?
Oh no, I don't think so. No, I think Willard will finish the job, but Rick Santorum is going to try to hang in all the way there, so as to try to have some sort of major influence over platform planks and things like that.
Mm.
Because ultimately, you're going to want. You know, the Republicans always more, because they're autocratic and because they're locksteppers, they want unanimity in their nominating process. And that's the leverage that Santorum hopes to have. And it was the leverage that Ron Paul hoped to have, but he can't seem to get the support of anybody except the people who wander around scratching themselves in untoward places and mumbling about the Fed.
And the pro marijuana people who think that Ron Paul is going to give them their God given right to smoke marijuana.
Right. No, it's not God. It's a constitutional right to smoke marijuana.
Yeah, they're right. They're constitutional right. Their constitutional right to smoke to use the Constitution as rolling papers to smoke their marijuana.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, you mentioned Santorum, and I do have a moment to stump you. This is called. This segment will be called Stumping Bob. I don't think you'll know the answer to this. What musician, what semi-known musician, said the following about the Republicans and Santorum? And when I give you the name, Bob, you're going to be, no.
I love these.
Looking at the Republican candidates, I got to tell you, I was floored the other day to see that Mitt Romney's five boys have a $100 million trust fund. Where does a guy make that much money? So there's some questions there. And watching Newt Gingrich, I was pretty excited for a while, but now he's just gotten back to being that person that everybody said he was, the angry little man. I still like him, but I don't think I'd vote for him. Ron Paul, you know, I've heard someone say he was like insecticide. 98% of it's inert gases, but it's the 2% that's left will kill you. What that means is that he'll make total sense for a while, and then he'll say something so way out of it that it negates everything else. I like the guy because he knows how to excite the youth of America and fill them in on some things. But when he says that we're like the Taliban, I'm sorry, Congressman Paul, but I'm nothing like the Taliban. Earlier in the election, I was completely oblivious as to who Rick Santorum was. But when the dude went home to be with his daughter when she was sick, that was very commendable. Also, just watching how he hasn't gotten into doing these horrible, horrible attack ads like Mitt Romney's done against Newt Gingrich, and then the volume at which Newt has gone back at Romney, you know, I think Santorum has some presidential qualities, and I'm hoping that if it does come down to it, we'll see a Republican in the White House and that it's Rick Santorum.
Okay, I got to tell you, I've had some help.
Okay.
Michael, Kid A in the chat room. Just sent in a with a question mark. Dave Mustaine,
right? He's
because I was ready to go. Ted Nugent.
yeah. So Mustaine. That's what I'm talking about. People being easily duped in politics. So
political babies. It's what we're political babies.
And but here's the thing about Mustaine that makes this even more interesting. He was the guy that was really involved. In the 92 elections, he was a correspondent for the 92 Choose or Lose and got everybody interested in politics on the MTV side of things. So to see this kind of, to be so easily deceived, this is what I keep telling people. This political party that you think is finished, finito, is done, all they need to do is just keep up the deceptions, keep deceiving people, and just keep the lie constantly going over and over and over again until everybody just says screw it.
Right, and understand that there is nothing illegal in trying to make voters too bummed out to go to the polls. That is another form of voter suppression, and it is one of the right wing's most effective tools. Whether it be funneling stuff out there saying that young people have been let down, or whether it's feeding the Barack Obama is the same as George Bush BS. There's a million different ways that they do it, and their favorite one is they're all alike. They're all corrupt. All Democrats. All Republicans. They're just all the same. And you'd be surprised the number of people who buy into it.
Right.
But they buy into it because it is what they're doing, what the people who pass these memes are doing, David, is they are confirming pre-existing prejudices. They're confirming pre-existing ignorance. They're confirming pre-existing bias. Because if you just believe that the whole thing stinks, it's all that nothing's worth it, you know. Then it's easy. It makes it easier to walk away from it and claim that you have no responsibility in it.
Right. I mean, the one thing that I would say is that when people tell, I hear this constantly about how the Republican Party. We've talked about this before, Bob. Republican Party is finished. It's finished. It's finished. It's finished. It's finished. And they say, well, they're just dying off. They're just dying off. But I don't think people understand is that. It's so easily to deceive people.
There will always be a little cadre of Republicans who have vast amounts of money, David, with which to influence political decisions. And as long as America remains as ignorant as it is, there will be a significant subset of people who can be influenced by the money of that small cadre of one percenters, and bang, nothing, you know, the country is essentially paralyzed, if not gut shot. And that's what you're seeing here. Remember, it's the lesson from Prohibition. You don't have to have a majority. You just have to have enough of a plurality to swing an election. You don't have to have 51%. You just need 8 or 12 or 20. And where these right-wing freaks are concerned, we're talking about upwards of 26%. By the way, onward to dystopia from the chat room, pointing out Dave Mustaine is a right-wing, born-again Christian fundy. Of course he would endorse Santorum. No surprise there.
I think there was always some question when he was doing the whole anti-war thing with peace sells, who's buying. I don't know if I buy the whole he was a right-wing Christian. I think, to me, when you get somebody like Mustaine, and this happens like a little bit in the metal community, people are so easily deceived on so many issues, and they just want to believe it after a while, but somehow that there's
a certain hipness that attaches to being above it all,
right?
But you know, I can't help. I have to live in reality world, and in reality world, I have to deal with, for instance, the fact that if I want to end mountaintop removal, I can't just sit in my easy chair and say, "Well, dang it, they're all corrupt." Because you know what? I actually went to Washington, D.C., worked some hallways, talked to some people, and you know what? I know for a fact that they are not all the same. I know for a fact, David, that they are not all corrupt.
Mm.
Because I've met some of them, and they're not. There are incredibly good people in office on Capitol Hill. They're outnumbered, they're surrounded maybe, but no, they're not all corrupt. And the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to stop what's happening to my communities by picketing outside of some coal company headquarters. Hell, they don't give a damn. They'll just call the cops and have us arrested. And here in West Virginia, Stan, a trespass arrest can carry a $100,000 damn bond now. So that just means that the people who trespassed go to jail for a few years until they scrape up the cash bond.
So you mentioned the whole thing with the coal situation. I just wanted to get your take on the EPA's ruling this week.
Which one? Oh, you mean the coal plant, the coal plants one?
Yeah, the standards. Yeah.
God knows they've been long enough in coming, and it's one of those little things that help a little bit. It helps. It helps a lot.
How easy is it to turn it to reverse that?
It depends on what mechanism is used. The courts.
How easy would it be for the Republicans if they were to get control of the EPA? Would it be to reverse standards like that? Could they do that in a second?
As Jamie Oliver says, easy peasy. Because the instructive tale is that of the fill rule. The Bush administration came in and said, "Nope. Mining waste is no longer pollution, it's just fill. Get with it, boys." And the next thing you know, the changing of one or two words winds up with 2,000 miles of streams buried. 500 mountains gone.
It is so sadistic and so unfair that the Republicans, you know, because if we reverse that, like how hard would it be for us to change the standards regarding something that we have a problem with?
Well, we've been begging them to do it, but they won't.
Yeah, that's what
because I mean, they are going through the when you get a Democrat in office, what happens is they actually want to follow the law.
Right.
And so they want to go through the rulemaking process. And so the Republican Party, in response, creates this atmosphere. This the EPA. I mean, yeah. That came from a so-called, what I read about the EPA at the beginning of the show, came from a so-called non-profit religious organization. The EPA is just like the Gestapo.
There was.
Well, they didn't come up with that by themselves.
There was no EPA at the time of the dinosaurs, Bob.
No, that's, it might have saved them. That's true, and the fossils were placed in the ground by Satan to confound right. the unbelievers.
The knights tried their best to save them, and the Vikings came over.
And started slaughtering dinosaurs.
Right.
I know.
It was such a travesty.
I guess the question is, how did all those Native American ancestors, how did they kill all the dinosaurs? I mean, were they?
I don't know, but this is a story, I mean, and I have to.
They didn't even have metal. Yeah.
I'll leave it at this. This is a story that I think that needs to be turned into a Christian film starring Kirk Cameron.
And for all we know, may already have been. Good to hear from you, David. Have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
All right, Bob. Later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. Our buddy Randy in Pennsylvania also says I need to, when giving out that email address for PayPal, I need to spell my name. And that's right, BOBKINCAID, Bob Kincaid, @gmail.com. Is the button back up yet? Are the buttons back up on, I don't know, I got in here too late to check. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Maybe he was saying niggerly.
Yeah, because that's Swedish, Sandra.
Well, no, he said Obama, the candidate, was an anti-war government. Nigger can fit rolls right off the tongue to me, so I don't know. Anyway, he's a bit of a joke.
Well, at this point, Sandra, he's past being a joke. This is like the fulfillment of prophecy. It's like watching a firecracker with a long fuse finally go off.
Well, maybe it's because, you know, at the moment, you know, so much blackness is swirling around in the nation's discussion. Maybe he's just sort of overwhelmed by it, you know, and he can't get away from it. It just, you know, it just sort of pops up, like you said, lizard brain. Who knows? He's particularly horrific. I wonder if he's going to vie for make us a slam-bam GOP ticket with him and Romney, or Romney and him.
See, he said too much nastiness about Romney, I think.
Well, yeah, because Romney seems like he's a real thin-skinned prick, so, yeah, he probably...
No, I really like what Malloy has put forward about, and he was passing it on from someone else, I can't remember, but I just caught a little bit of it the other night, about Jebby being Willard's vice presidential nominee.
Oh. Well, all of it is really disturbing, but... I'm never sure what Mr. Obama is doing, because today he seems to be giving more red meat to the Israelis. And it's like, okay, wait a minute, you want to raise up gas prices on people who need to vote for your ass in order to keep, I guess he opted for one nightmare in order to avoid the other nightmare, which would be a war.
Gas prices
versus a war. So if he placates the Israelis by fucking the Iranians, then maybe he can get through November. I mean, I'm trying to figure out the thought process here, because squeezing Iran through the banking system, I mean, that is so horrible for the people and everything else. It's not, you know, especially when our own intelligence services have said repeatedly that they are not making the bomb. You see what I'm saying? And it's just disturbing the hell out of me that they're playing this game, and it's a dangerous game.
It's a very, very dangerous game, Sandra, and the only thing I can figure is that if you take it as a foregone conclusion that if Barack Obama speaks in a forest and there's no teabagger to hear him, that he is still wrong, okay, and I'm being a little bit facetious, but not much, there is anything involving Israel is a no-win situation in this country for him. So as such, he has to a certain extent, I guess, play to a wider audience. Does that make any sense? The idea of tightening sanctions is better than warfare in the international community and makes it less makes the international community less willing to tolerate warfare created by Israel?
But sanctions, though, as we've seen, are flawed. They lead to war. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because...
They don't push a country towards your goals, because, as we know, in an international world, countries will act in their own self-interest. Very seldom are these sort of tactics going to work. You know what I mean?
Well, right, because...
It's worked up to now, and they're surrounded by enemies. I'm talking about Iran. So, I don't see the benefits here. And I see a lot of problems for Obama if Israel uses... I forget the country in the Russian area that they're staging now. I don't know. What's it called? Starts with
Azerbaijan?
Yeah, Azerbaijan. Apparently they have a real cozy relationship, Israel and that country, and they're able to stage whatever from there, and that's directly into Iran. So, I mean, there's a lot of unknowns that is beyond the control of Obama, except for we're paying for all this sort of interaction with Israel and whoever. That's the thing that's really gut-wrenching. It's like, you know, cut the money off already. Shit.
Yeah, and I don't know. Perhaps the wider world community will do that. We won't.
No, I don't. I think that it's, you know, I'm not saying. I don't think he wants to start a sort of whatever war. I mean, I just think that it can quickly get out of control. I mean, Israel is not a very stable actor in this. They seem to be a bit unhinged as far as,
Well, you know, as Jim is so fond of pointing out, history is cyclical and not linear. And the question is, once you get yourself in one of these cycles, Sandra, how do you break it? And barring Israel getting a different government, breaking the cycle that they're trapped in right now is going to be, I mean, because they're on a war footing and they are marching, you know?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting because if you know, with the one good thing about the Twitter feed is if you hook up with different whatevers, you can, you know, if you get the Twitter from, or the Twitter feed from different people representing the Palestinian interest, well, you sort of get to see that, well, shit, they are just having a good time bombing the shit and picking off and just having a right old good time in the occupied territories. I mean, this seems to be constant, nonstop, with Israel taking pot shots and killing Palestinians 24/7. And forgive me for my ignorance. I had no idea that it was like that until I started following quite a few, and it's just a nightmare over there.
And even the right wing is beginning to acknowledge, I mean, they're not just acknowledging it, they're saying it's okay. Here in the U.S., there's this group called the Emergency Committee for Israel?
Yeah.
Hard right wing, this is the same filthy crowd that says there's no such thing as a Palestinian, I believe. Well, I guess today, and maybe it's already happened, but thousands of protesters were going to participate in what was being called the Global March to Jerusalem.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was going to be activists from neighboring countries marching to the Israeli border to demonstrate solidarity with Palestinians and protect Jerusalem. Okay.
Like they did last year.
Yeah, now there's nothing here about bringing guns or bombs or grenades or dynamite belts, but the Emergency Committee for Israel, Noah Pollack, said Global March to Jerusalem needs a more accurate name, like Global March to Become Target Practice for the IDF. And then Mr. Podoritz tweeted, I hope Israel puts low jacks on every one of the 1,000 monsters it releases. And Pollack responded, or bullets. More bullets?
Yeah, I mean, no, it just seems to be, like I said, part of it is, you know, paying attention, and part of it just seems to be that this government of Israel just lashes out, you know, it just kills people. I mean, it's it's definitely not very stable, and it's a bit of a worry. And if Obama's trying to be reasonable, well, there, you know, much like his opponents here, there's not much reason going on with that lot. So anyway, I just, you know, I'm concerned for President Obama. I just think it's always coming at him from all sides. And the Supreme Court thing, listen, that's pretty disturbing. You know, when you think about, I don't know who I was listening to, but they were talking about how all important decisions, you know, with any careful consideration of viewing the institution as an arbiter, was like tried to be a unanimous decision or close to unanimity. But with this lot, they don't give a F.
And they don't care. They don't care if they wind up overturning Marbury versus Madison.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's just sort of, and it's just, to me, I think that, I mean, you know, I think that they're seriously, the legitimacy has gone out the window, and it flew out the window with the Bush-Gore, to
right.
me. And so I think that they're, but I do think they might make a serious mistake. I think there'll be a fair bit of blowback. On the other hand, though, I guess they need to strike the whole thing down, because if they only strike the mandate down, they're going to be upsetting the insurance companies, because the insurance companies will be stuck with just sick people, and they won't, you know, and they have to give insurance to them. So this is a bit of a mess, and the way they were talking, they scared me, because they don't sound like they know what the hell they're doing. Sorry, from what I listened to, I was scared. I'm like, do you really know?
Well, right. It, you know, when there's no questions from any of these vaunted right-wing constitutional purist thinkers about the deference to be accorded to Congress, well, then that tells me that they're working from a pre-assumed set of a pre-reached set of assumptions that says that the default position is to strike the law down, or some portion, or, and the fact of the matter is, that is directly contrary to 200 years worth of precedent.
No, but it also goes, I mean, as far as this particular issue of health care goes, they are even, I mean, you know, I'm scared that they will do what they do all the time, is even widen it, because they actually, I don't know which one it was, but they actually threw out the possibility that, well, shit, maybe that law that requires hospitals to see patients who come in should be looked at. You see?
They
sound like they're willing to, you know, let's just get rid of all of LGBT, you know, the Great Society, all of it. I mean, that's what scared me, too. I was like, oh, wait, they're starting to question even the existing Medicare, Medicaid regime that we have in place.
Well, and see, there's a story that David in Tennessee sent along yesterday that just had me howling. You know, one of the realities, because they did raise the issue of what do we do about mandatory treatment issues.
Yeah, it sounds like
the Dateline is out of Richmond Heights, Missouri. MSNBC reporting this thing. Officials at a St. Louis hospital on Thursday defended their actions in the case of a homeless woman who sought treatment for a sprained ankle and died in police custody after being arrested for refusing to leave the emergency room.
How did she die in police custody? What did they say she died of?
An autopsy determined that Anna Brown's death in a jail cell in September was caused by blood clots that formed in her legs and migrated to her lungs.
Okay, so it could have been related to the leg, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And so the St. Louis Post-Dispatch has the surveillance footage of her death. And in the video, the officers are seen carrying Anna Brown, who was a young woman, into a jail cell. The cell door closes, and she's heard moaning and crying.
Yeah, well, the
29-year-old mother of two.
How old?
29.
Yeah, no, but those clots, though, that will kill anybody.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. You know, if that's what's going on.
And the thing is, what you think is a sprain may be a break, and if it's a break, yeah, you're in real blood clot problems.
Right. No. Oh my God.
But the hospital says that they did appropriate tests, and she was sitting there and tried to, because the weak-kneed, pathetic little law that says they've got to treat you only says that they have to stabilize you.
Yeah,
and stabilize is a really fluid definition.
No, but see, and it also falls to, you know, where you happen to be. If you're in California, you know, each state could actually add on extras. You see what I'm saying?
I mean,
there's funds that can be, at least in California, in Sacramento, you know, you can get access to some city funds, you know, so... It just varies from state to state.
Well, I mean, I hate to read at you, Sandra, but just listen to the. I mean, we talked a minute ago about, you know, getting trapped in a cycle. Listen to this for a minute and see if you don't just want to run screaming into the night. Brown went to three hospitals complaining of leg pain, and you know, leg pain. Jesus, that first thing that clots, and you get the little ultrasound gizmo out and. Right? But, you know, as long as, I guess she wasn't looking for an abortion, so nobody was interested in ultrasounds in Missouri. But she went to three hospitals complaining of leg pain in the days leading up to her death. And then the third visit was to St. Mary's Hospital. Really, St. Mary's. St. Mary's Hospital. You know, pray for us in our hour of need, St. Mary. Okay? And that's where she got arrested for trespassing. Now, this is her history. Before what happened to her.
She wouldn't leave because she wanted to get care, so they arrested her because she wouldn't leave.
Right, she was trespassing. A New Year's Eve tornado in 2010 destroyed Brown's home in North St. Louis. She and her two children moved to Berkeley, a St. Louis suburb, and she lost her job at a sandwich shop soon afterward. Then, according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, her utilities were shut off because she stopped paying her bills, and after a child welfare agent who visited the home in April found a feces-filled toilet, burn marks on the floor where she had lit fires to keep warm, and other distressing signs, Brown was arrested for parental neglect. They said she seemed confused, the cops did. Her mother was given custody of her children on the condition that she couldn't also live with them, that Aunt Anna could not also live with them. Her home was condemned. She lived in four homeless shelters from May to September. God bless America, right? Is this the part where we cue up Lee Greenwood?
Well, I mean, I'm just like, it's just so shocking. And it just seems to be the same story over and over again. This poor woman. So she's dead.
Yeah.
And her kids are...
In the care of their grandmother, who says, if the police killed her, I want to know. If the hospital killed her, I want to know, because I have to be able to tell her children why their mother isn't here. Do I have to add the last last piece of the puzzle to this, Sandra?
Yep.
I mean, she's a 29-year-old black woman.
Okay, well, I mean, I didn't even want to go there because it just is so distressing already. Yeah, well.
But I mean, what do we say in post-racial America, that they would have arrested the white woman and thrown her in jail and let her die there too? Is that how we make it all better in America now? I'm a little past. I haven't been okay since I saw this from David last night.
I know, but those stories, it just seems to happen a lot.
And see, outside the Supreme Court there, and I mean, I'd never seen anything like this. You know, you see footage of it, and it just happened to be a beautiful bluebird, blue sky, perfect day, and all the freaks were out. And, you know, there's dude with his great big gruesome picture of Obama next to... an aborted fetus, which is probably a stillbirth instead of an abortion, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, I guess. But there were, you know, and there were a lot of people of goodwill, demonstrating, saying, protect the law, protect my health care. Planned Parenthood was there. Faith-based organizations were there. It was noble and it was good.
Yeah.
But the freaks show up with their Gadsden flags, and I've got audio. If you go look on the Horns Ustream page, you can hear some of the audio about how they're going to start killing our grandmothers with this Obamacare.
Well, I mean, the thing is,
there was no picture of Anna Brown. who, if she had, why does a woman with no job who is homeless, why does she not have Medicaid?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, I know, it's just stunning. She, usually when you have kids, that also opens up what little services we have, too. You know what I mean?
But bear in mind, she had been divested of her children. And see, there's a whole bunch. There's like 14 states in the union, Sandra, where if you don't have literally a penny to your name, Florida and Texas among them, probably Missouri as well, West Virginia is one of them. If you don't have a penny to your name, if you don't have a roof over your head, if you don't have a job, a car, if you literally don't have a pot to piss in and a window to throw it out of, you still don't qualify for the health care plan that is by definition designed for the poorest of the poor.
Well,
and that's just a brutal little wake-up call about this brutal, great, big country we live in.
Well, I mean, it was interesting that, you know, towards the end of the last day, you know, they all seemed to be a bit disturbed that, you know, all the other stuff would go bye-bye. I mean, you know, they really seem to think that they can just strike down this one thing and... I don't know what they think will happen. I mean, I guess they don't really give a hell. They don't have to.
No, they don't have to.
They got plenty of nice health care for them and theirs, and I guess that's how it goes.
You know, that evil old son of a fascist Scalia told us everything we needed to know when he equated mandated health care with the government forcing you to eat broccoli.
Well, no, but it's...
I mean, Jesus, I wanted to tear my own hair out of my scalp with that.
No, but it's so weird when they talk about how smart this guy is, because I think a 16-year-old attentive high schooler could figure out the fallacy on that bullshit.
Well, you know what? I just happen to have proof because I took a 16-year-old with me. And he heard that, and he looked at me, and he said, "Dad, that guy's nuts." And he is. But that's the way it works in right-wing circles. You know, you sit there and you prattle on and you use a couple of polysyllabic words once in a while, and the right-wing knuckle-walkers are, "Listen to that. He used words I don't know what they mean and can't say them neither. That must mean he real smart."
No, but the fact that the for-profit slime media, you know, repeats that argument, too, had my head shaking. I'm like, come on.
You know what?
You know?
And you know, that all that stuff I saw up there, you know, "Oh, taking away our freedom, they're going to get our liberty." Well, one, it's like we said before. How free are you when liberty means being able to die of treatable conditions? One. And two, the other side of this is that the mandate, you know, there are people out there, including, as was noted by one of the people I interviewed, you know, the woman who is the lead plaintiff on one of these cases has just filed bankruptcy because of medical bills.
Well,
and she refused all along to... It wasn't like she couldn't afford insurance. These people were well enough off to have health insurance. They refused to purchase it. So what... And so what happens with her medical bills is that the people who have insurance...
Yeah, exactly.
...carry her dead ass.
Yeah,
okay?
Which destroys the broccoli argument. You know what I'm saying?
It just stomps the broccoli into the ground. Yeah. But the other side of it is, and you know, our side is no good at framing stuff, I guess. But the other part of this argument is that the right wing is arguing for the freedom to be deadbeats.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly what it is, which is why the arguments also said, oh, well, if the government demanded a tax and created a program, then that wouldn't be a problem. It's like, hello, what the fuck did you just describe? Single payer. I mean, it is so warped in this country because, as I think the next question should always be asked when they ask, you think, you know, we should have that sort of system, and most people agree, until you say, but there's a black woman with two kids, she will have access to this too. You know, then the answers change. Am I wrong?
No.
And see, that's the core issue once again in this really disturbed country. Who deserves what?
You know what? I got to mention this in the context of what you just asked, Sandra. You know, I've been babbling on and on and on about this book I've been reading, 1493. And I just got to a portion. I haven't been able to devote the time to it that it needs, so I'm reading a chapter at a time. You know how it goes. But I just got to this this chapter where he's talking about the rise of slavery. But Mr. Mann is speaking in general terms about who populated the Western Hemisphere from Europe, and what we are taught from the time, you know, pilgrims and people seeking religious freedom and entrepreneurs who were miserable at Jamestown, and there's Sir Walter Raleigh out there off North Carolina, and that thing failed, and you got Spanish folks whiter than Castile soap going into, and it's on and on and on, and you're given the impression that, you know, white people settled North America, or white people settled the Americas, and then as an afterthought they say, and then they brought in slaves. Well, the fact of the matter is, as Charles C. Mann points out in this book, the Western Hemisphere was not settled by white people. The Western Hemisphere was settled by people from Africa. And see, that's one of those things that runs underneath all of this and absolutely, I think, subconsciously drives these teabaggers and these right-wingers absolutely to distraction. You know, just like the fact that the first European language spoken on this continent was Spanish, not English. The fact of the matter is, these continents were settled by immigrants from Africa. You know, by a ratio of like 4-1. And they don't want to deal with it, because I think they know it. And they're still trying to figure out a way to neutralize those numbers.
No, I also think it just comes down to those people on the court. You know, they're perfectly happy rolling it all back to 1804, and that's about it.
I'm not sure. I'm not so sure they're going to be happy with 1804. I mean, they want to. I get the notion that the Supreme Court, sometimes, you know, with people, especially with people like Scalia and Thomas, that they would like to actually disband themselves. And just give up altogether, or functionally disband themselves, so that the only thing that they have to do is uphold right wing policy and strike down anything that has any smattering of something good for poor folks.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I just I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
Well, I mean, just as an example, Sandra. You know, practically everything about the Affordable Care Act comes from, as I was reminded this past week,
the Heritage Foundation. Right. No, it's true.
Let's say that that's what gets passed in 1992 instead of so-called Hillary Care.
Yeah. But the idea that it can be reduced to, we can't have, you know, an N-word helping other N-words and poor people, that can't happen. I hate to think that.
Well, you know, they're out there saying that Barack Obama's remarks about, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon.
Yeah.
That's hate speech now.
Well, yeah, right. All that, you know, that whole thing that they're doing is so outrageous because, hello, is a dead person, a dead child. You see, that seems to just go by the wayside in their sort of smearing and foaming at the mouth.
And what's expanding here is the notion that, yes, Trayvon Martin is a dead child, but it turns out we've got a dead children problem. Because there's one of these cases in San Diego. There's another case, as we mentioned, in Wisconsin. They're all over the place. You know, it turns out that George Zimmerman's father is a former judge and a right-wing one to boot.
Right. No. I mean, and then it's just, yeah, it's just kind of...
George had been to anger management classes?
No, but and just how upset these right-wing white people are, like, no, we want to shoot you, and we don't want to hear nothing from you. I mean, they don't want to hear from the parents of this kid. They don't want to hear that 2 million people have signed an online petition. They don't want to hear from the black president about anything to do with anything.
Well, no,
they really don't want any of us in the streets. I mean, you know, and if I may just shift quite quickly to something that's equally disturbing, not equally, because this dead kid is like the worst, but I have to say, the freak out over the Hunger Games having a few little brown people in it is also very telling. I just think, I don't know if you heard about this, but a lot, they had this whole sort of tweeting of other kids freaking out because, oh my God, why are they dark? So and so shouldn't be dark, and you know it's a real problem. Although, I mean, the movie's doing well enough, but it just seems to be they shouldn't have had black people playing lead roles.
You know, this goes back to something that we talked about a year and a half ago, the right-wing hissy that was had when one of the characters in the comic book movie Thor turned out to have dark skin and he was a Nordic god. And all the little skinheads and the pillowcase wearers, well, you can't, our holy sacred Nordic pure Caucasian Aryan mythology is being mongrelized by the mud people. No kidding.
Well, I don't know anything about this Hunger Game, but from what I can tell, the actual book, the writer is pretty clear about the characters being dark skin. That's like written in a book. So for these people to be shocked when it comes to the movie and the characters happen to have dark skin and they're like freaking out because it's not Blue Moon or Moon Who or whatever other movies they go out and rush to see.
Yeah, those have very pale people in them.
Well, anyway, I don't know. I suppose because it's just, it's sort of just blown up.
Well, I've got to read these books because one of the things that fascinates me is that in this dystopian, the fallen apart world future, some of the kids that are selected for the Hunger Games are hillbillies, and they come from Appalachia. And that is not lost on me, and I need to see because the author was writing, if I understand the descriptions I've seen of the books, not necessarily the movie, the author was writing, the books have cautionary qualities to them.
Well, it's written by a woman, and I mean, I don't know, I might have to check it out just because of all this hoopla about it. I'm like, oh my God, let me go and see this, but I don't know.
Yeah, I know. And we're running out of time and stuff, but we didn't even get to Cheney's New Heart. And that happened last week, and I've just been over it ever since.
Oh, no, I can't even wrap my head around that weird shit. I just think, give me a break. And, what did the family, they're staying anonymous, or what was the deal with it?
Yeah, they're not, well, I imagine they're staying anonymous. I don't know if they're anonymous to the IRS or not.
Well, no, but the other victim of his, what was pushed out to apologize to him for getting shot. So God knows what they might have done to this family that wants to.
Well, God forbid you find out who the anonymous donor is, and they turn out to be somebody with the last name of Patel who still lives on the Indian subcontinent.
Oh, you're terrible. Or some place where they fancy themselves putting bullets in people's heads, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
God knows. But, no, when he turned up with that, I thought I'd be goddamn, because he's like 71, isn't he?
Well, that's, and that's ultimately the question. How does a 71-year-old, not just 71-year-old man, a 71-year-old atherosclerotic man, you can put new hearts in him all day long, but his entire circulatory system is screwed.
Oh, it has to be. How long has he been walking? Was he walking around? Maybe that was like over a year when they just put something without a pulse in him.
Yeah.
Remember?
And so he's 71, and he rockets to the top of the charts.
Well, we know what that's about. That's that 1%.
Yeah, sure it is.
1%, and combined with.
But I want to know. You know what I want to know? I want to know. Who was number two on the chart? I want to know number two on the list. I want to know if it was a 43-year-old father of four.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know exactly what's going on here. I mean, the whole system is so dysfunctional. So, of course, they're going to grab what they want. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and tell us to like it.
It's gruesome. It's really gruesome.
There needs to be a wholesale redo or a reexamination of the donor listing, donor availability, donor and recipient requirement process. That's the main thing that this proves. But the other part of it is that we need to know what kind of channels are available out there. I mean, you know, this is like giving a new liver to a drunk who hasn't stopped drinking.
Well, it's the sort of Mickey Mantle and J.R. Ewing, you know, all them people, that type.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but anyway, he still can't travel. So that's, you know, he's another one that, oh, I'm not going to Canada. Remember, you heard about that story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he's never leaving the United States again.
I mean, but I fear that all of our presidents or emperors from now on will fall into that, because I don't think Obama's going to be swanning the earth either after what he's done.
There's a strong chance that he probably won't. For either legal or security reasons. The only thing he hasn't done that many people have forgotten is that he didn't start those wars.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like that's another thing I wanted to mention, because I saw this report where the little surviving, just bless them, you know, little cute little children who survived that attack in Afghanistan.
Right.
All the children talking about, well, one of them was over here and the other ones were outside. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're suggesting that it was more than one.
Oh, that there were multiple shooters.
Right. And it's like, well, you can't have one outside with a light and then one shooting up your parents. Has to be more. Anyway, I just shake my head on that, too, thinking.
Yeah, and somebody taking the rap.
Yeah, it's too weird. It just sounds like it was a horror show that with multiple people who did it. So I don't know. But I think that that's going to drive us a lot of chit-chat now about Obama trying to wrap that war up, too. You know? We'll see.
And when something like that happens, you start having to consider it. I was in one of the Senate office buildings this week, and there's a display of a number of, you know, those white boards with the photographs of everybody who's died in Afghanistan and Iraq since September 11th, 2001. It was like going to the Vietnam Wall. Because it made you want to cry. Because every one of those photographs, and there were some photographs of people who were so new to the military that they didn't even have the official photograph with the flag in the background and their uniform on.
Oh my God.
And you just look, and every one of them was wasted. Just wasted. And the fact of the matter is, a bunch of them have died on Obama's watch, especially in Afghanistan. And it was never the right war. I disagree with him profoundly that it was.
Oh, no. No, sir.
And it's time to get out.
But
it was all done at the behest of Dick Cheney, George Bush, Paul Wolfowitz, Condi Rice, Colin Powell, and every last one of that bunch that should have been standing in a dock answering for war crimes charges long ago.
Ushered in by the Supreme Court, that's a corrupt yet
there you go.
Corrupt institution.
And we come full circle.
And it's just like, wow. Anyway, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'll let you go. Talk to somebody else.
Have a good evening, Sandra. Right. Good to hear from you. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, what's happening?
Not much. Just called to say how glad I am to hear you back on the radio.
Well, it was a long time away. I mean, I enjoyed the broadcast from D.C., but to get all Dorothy Gumma from Kansas, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Yep. And
because I just don't feel I don't feel comfortable in that very large room, getting all boomy and you know, talking the way I like to talk. And the fact that I can't channel in you guys makes it doubly so.
Yeah, and that's what I noticed from the feed, is that you sound really bassy, I guess is the word.
The first day there were audio problems that have to do with the equipment that for some reason sneak up on me without me necessarily knowing it. I thought it was addressed, it wasn't, but then I redid everything and it sounded dramatically different come Tuesday.
Yeah,
That's why we've been running Tuesday and not Monday. There's no, I sound like James Earl Jones on Valium when that thing happens, and it's really annoying.
Hearing that bass voice on Monday reminded me of the days you were doing the Christian radio there in Alabama, and made me think, well, gee, maybe I have heard Bob Kincaid when he was doing that back then, because I lived in Birmingham the time.
No, that signal, that signal couldn't have reached you in a million years. It was a teeny tiny little transmitter that just kind of went around the block. But no, that was a technical problem that I've just got to. This is equipment that I haven't worked with that much, and I have to get better at it. And John's been teaching me a lot along the way. But I thought the thing was licked, but it wasn't. But by Tuesday, so every time I set it up now, I just have to go and redo.
Well, it's good learning experience, because the next time you do it, there you go. You've got it fixed, hopefully.
Indeed.
So, you know, this Trayvon Martin thing still sticks with me.
Well, not only will it not go away, it should not, must not go away.
No, and I don't think it will. I keep getting various emails from organizations requesting petition signatures and that kind of thing, even today. So, but I was wondering, I know on the, I think it was that Monday afternoon, they were having a rally for Trayvon there in D.C. Did you happen to catch any of that?
No, I didn't.
Okay. You didn't catch any on the news or anything of
it? No, I have been largely out of the loop. These things, well, what we do when we go up there absolutely consumes you. It's impossible to do the kind of keeping up to date work that I like to do here.
Yep. Well, I can understand that. When you were talking earlier about the one encounter with the right wing, for lack of a better word, nutcase. What was your most crazy? I mean, what was the one that really stuck out as far as, man, this guy is just Looney Tunes?
Well, the guy
than the rest.
The guy that Ferg describes as Snapple guy, because his randomized information just reads like something under the cap of a bottle of Snapple. Has to have the lead, but the fact of the matter is, look at it like this: when you walk into the monkey house of the zoo, and they're all flinging poo through the bars,
right?
Yeah. It's hard to look at one and say he's flinging more poo than the rest.
Yep.
They are uniformly uninformed. They are uniformly ill-intentioned. They are ignorant in the extreme. They have been, and the way that they, you know, they were shepherded by suited AFP people, that's supposedly Americans for Prosperity or something. That's the Dick Army group.
Americans for Poorness?
Well, Americans effing the poor, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that would be better.
And they were, you know, with all this meaningless babble about liberty and freedom, when what they're talking about is they want to be allowed to be deadbeats on the backs of the rest of us. You know, abortion signs, I've got a picture here. I thought I'd tweeted it. Maybe I haven't. If I didn't, it was out of respect for the Twitter stream and people who might click on the photograph. The woman hollering about no man was going to be able to get a PSA test anymore, that Obamacare was making it illegal.
Yeah.
You know, the birthers were out in force. What it was an outdoor meeting of the John Birch Society, and the statistical evidence, Kevin, backs that up.
Yeah, and if you'd had one good miniature nuke there, even though it would have been...
I can't do that. I won't do that. I'm the nonviolent guy, remember? But the thing is, I also had to take into account something our buddy Reverbo has so often noted, and that is You're not going to change these people's minds because these people aren't using their minds. These are not intellectual positions made in a good faith argument over the right way to go about being a country. These people are not engaging their brains. What they have are talking points that reinforce their preconceived bigotries. That's all a teabagger is.
Yep.
And because you can't dialogue with them, the only thing you can do is try to close the bus doors and move on without them and hope that you can make a better country. But as they've proven, they have allies with horse-gagging loads of money who are bound and determined to reduce this country to rubble. And maybe that's something our side hasn't gotten all the way to its core, Kevin, that the teabaggers, they are anti-American, okay? And this is not, you know, I'm not one of those America, live it or leave it types. They are anti-American because they hate everything about the fundamental structure of this country. Just like a fundamentalist bangs on the Bible as a justification for his hatred instead of the purported saving grace of Christ Jesus, these people bang on the Constitution as a means of eliminating it.
Yep.
They don't like it. They don't want it to mean anything. They don't want the federal government to have any life at all except being a spigot for corporate welfare for the 1% and a life support system for the 1% who control the military-industrial congressional complex. That's all they want it to be. The rest of it can fall into ruins. It can go to microscopic crumbs for all that they care. You know, if they can't acknowledge that the Constitution's Commerce Clause allows this to happen, when we understand that the framers of the Constitution were coming out of a system in which the several states were constantly at each other's throats over commercial issues, and that the framers were deadly in earnest about making sure that degree of dysfunction stopped, if they can't understand, Kevin, that the necessary and proper clause means that if the government is afforded some notion that they're acting in goodwill, that they are able to do those things which are necessary and proper to keep the government running, if they can't understand the general welfare, then what's left? What's left? You know, there's a story out of, I mean, I read a little bit here and there. You know, the Export-Import Bank, which has problems, is being allowed to die by the Republicans in the House. And their own constituents are going to them and saying, are you crazy? You're going to put us out of business. Because this isn't some little penny-ante bank. This isn't some, you know, diamond-dollar savings and loan. This is a structure that allows American businesses to sell stuff overseas that the Export-Import Bank finances at a you know, some percentage point cost to the borrower, which in turn funds the bank's ability to operate, and allows American goods to go overseas so that the trade deficits with the rest of the world don't just shoot through the roof.
Nope.
But the teabaggers that control the Congress don't want any part of that, Kevin. They want to see it burn. These are, for all intents and purposes, pasty-faced, white, doughy rioters screaming at the entire neighborhood that is the United States of America, burn, baby, burn.
Yep. Well,
preaching, I apologize.
No, preach on. You know, these same people that are complaining about having to everyone pay for the insurance are the same ones that think nothing of paying for car insurance and nothing about making a law that everybody in your state pays car insurance.
Yeah, but see, that's state action. That's state action. And right now, within their BS framework, if the states wanted to do this, well, the states could do it. Because those are rights that are not allowed to be exercised by the federal government. But the thing, but the reason that they make that argument is the same reason that they make the argument that Roe versus Wade should be overturned, and that the, a woman's reproductive choices should be decided on a state by state basis, because they know that it's easier to manipulate a state government, and cheaper too, than it is to get the federal government completely in one's pocket.
Yep.
Makes sense?
Oh yeah, yeah, it makes sense. Kevin Zeitz, I think is his name, Malloy was interviewing him, and he was talking about the fact that, you know, it may end up, when we get through all this, there may be six different countries out of the one America that used to be, because we're so divided on things. But, you know, you've got a group of people there that refuse to compromise at all because of ideology. They can't see past their nose to spite their face. And when you have people like that, you're right, you can't, there's no sense in trying to change their mind because it's unchangeable. And they're always going to find something to, as you said, approve their preconceived,
Yeah, it's just validation. It's just like getting your parking validated at the department store. That's all the right wing does with this pseudo-legalistic constitutional originalism construct garbage. It's just,
I mean,
it's validation. It's getting their ticket. It's getting their ideological ticket punched.
I've got a news story here. Rick Santorum, this has been a few weeks back. He said that the Obamacare, as he called it, is like a drug, and that the American people would become addicted to it. And if you turn what he said around, what he's saying is that the American people would like the Obamacare once they got it.
Well, that's why, I mean, that, you know, our side hasn't talked worth a damn about the Medicaid expansion. It's huge, because, you know, for everybody who, and I was part of it, who during the discussion of the Affordable Care Act howled and hollered about, you know, mandating people to participate. You know, I object to forcing someone to feed money into a system that profiteers on people's anguish, agony, misery, and death. But also within the Affordable Care Act is a provision that says only a certain amount of premiums may go to things beyond administrative costs. So it cuts down on that profiteering business. Secondly, we haven't said squat about what happens to Medicaid, but you know what? The GOP, the right wing, the teabaggers, what have you, they know damned good and well what happens on January 1st, 2014. They know that 11 to 17 million human beings who did not have it before, like, for instance, it's a pity she's not going to be around for it, the dead lady from St. Louis, Mrs. Brown,
yep,
she'd be insured. She wouldn't get thrown out of the emergency room of St. Mary's Hospital in St. Louis. She would be treated. She might get some blood thinners. She wouldn't die. And the right wing knows these things, and they know that they have to kill Obamacare, as they call it, before January 1st, 2014, because when those millions come on, it's going to make it easier down the road to expand access. And the way you expand access is by departing upward on the threshold of the poverty scale that allows people into Medicaid. And the next thing you know, you've got a full-on single-payer system that the left so desperately wanted, and I do, and as do I.
Yep.
And you've got it without ever having to pass single-payer health care through the Congress.
Yep.
The same thing happened with Medicare. The same thing happened with Social Security.
Yep. And people fought the same, said the same things about Social Security, and now you've got idiots out there telling government to keep their hands off their Social Security.
You asked me who was nuttiest there. There was a woman in some sort of hover-round scooter that was bought by the effing government, Kevin.
Exactly.
With a sign that said, keep your hands off my health care.
Yep. And
I don't know how to respond to it. You know, I don't know. Maybe the best way to respond to it would have been to have somebody put a Thorazine dart in my neck with a blowgun because there's no realistic way to deal with it except to say, you know, Jesus, some members of my country are stupid. But lo and behold, there were millions of dollars to bust those stupid people to Capitol Hill with their little godforsaken Gadsden flags. I'm honest to God. You know what? I'd like to burn me a Gadsden flag. And I'm not a flag burner. But I've gotten to the point where, you know, in 2012, we're not talking about the way it was used during the revolution or anything, but in 2012, when I see a Gadsden flag, I know that I am looking upon an idiot. Not just a misguided soul, a straight up idiot.
Yep.
I mean, a blithering, you know, chase them with a net idiot. Oh, you're coming after my freedom, and I'm like this here rattlesnake. I mean, I saw them. They were standing, you know, screaming, "We will not comply!" You know, if this Obamacare survives constitutional scrutiny, will you stand still for it? We will not comply! Well, what are you going to do? Have you a revolution with your little shotguns and your pistols?
I think that's what.
Will you mind if we bring the attack helicopters in and just? Well, no, I'm being hateful. I'm going to stop. We will not comply. You know, this isn't like some sort of daggum lunch counter protest.
It has to be said though, Bob, because that's what these people are about. You know, they want the hate. They want to divide. And just like you talked about that one guy that said he hated Obama, but he's a Christian. You know, you're like, are you even aware of what you just said? You know? But they will not acknowledge anything at all. They won't give in to anything. Not even to the fact that the president's an American. Not even to the fact that he was elected president. You know? When that Supreme Court ruling went against us in 2000, even though we didn't like it, and we all said that the election was stolen from Gore, most of us went on with our lives, and, you know, but these people haven't let go of the fact Obama won the presidency.
They haven't let go of 1865.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And what's sad about that is for those of us who long ago have gotten over that and never had an ounce of prejudice in it or have outgrown it, it troubles us because I do not want to live in a society where there is this much hate against someone just because of their color. I'm blind. I don't see color, first of all, but I did at one time, and that's the only thing I can say good about my blindness. And it is freeing when you realize that this color makes no difference. It makes sense. Color, race, religion, you need to take a person based on what they are, not based on the color of their skin.
But look at the changes, Kevin. Look at the changes that are wrought in this society by the fact that a religious organization that is tax-exempt and yet hustles gold and patent medicines on its website.
Yep.
Look what happens when they hide behind that religious exemption, when in fact their entire website has... I didn't see Jesus on that website anywhere, but I saw a bunch of crap about politics.
Yep. Yep, and it should be prosecuted, but I think even if we had a Democratic House, Senate, and the presidency all in one, I don't think there's anyone brave enough to take that on. But it needs to be prosecuted because it goes against the very fundamentals of our Constitution. But good luck getting someone to take that on. They just had that story about Jan and Paul Crouch and what they did with their money, and no prosecutions yet. You know, These people stole billions from their followers and spent it on themselves, not on the ministry, but they hid behind that tax-exempt status, whereas you and I can't do that, making $13,000 a year or whatever it is, you know? That's the sad part, is that the rules are stacked against those who least can afford to play by the rules.
Indeed.
I guess that's a good way to say it.
Indeed. Kevin, thank you very much. Have a good weekend, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Hey, good to hear you, and you have a good weekend, too.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Kevin calling from Colorado Springs, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob.
Well, hey, Cossack, what's up?
Hi, Easter, you. How you doing? It's good to have you back.
Oh, I'm so happy to be home. I don't know what to do. Well, yeah, I do know what to do. About 2 minutes after the light goes off here, I'm getting in bed. You know, I don't. You know, if these hotel beds were made of spun gold, and they are comfortable and they're nice and everything, ain't nothing like home.
There's no place like home.
Click them heels, Dorothy.
You know, Bob, in my reading, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the First Amendment say Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people peaceably to assemble?
That's in there, yep.
And oddly enough, I don't see any time limitations on that.
Not really.
I don't see where, you know, you get together, have an indignation meeting, go home.
Actually, it's Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Right.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, religion came first.
Well, we know why that is, but... But, you know, that's the thing. These people don't seem to understand that the founding fathers were a lot closer to the events of the religious wars in Europe and saw what it did to Europe and didn't want to have any of that crap over here.
Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. And like I said, since, you know, if you think about it, let's go back to original construction. Back in the old days, for the people to assemble, it took a long time.
Yeah.
Travel was, you know, a long process. So when you finally assembled, it was, you know, you would have to assume that it would take time.
Sure.
That's why it's not time limited. Then why are they kicking the occupiers out of the various parks? Under what jurisdiction?
There's an adverb in there. Peaceably. And peaceably doesn't mean that everybody has to be peaceful. Peaceful means that it has to speak to the public peace.
Correct.
As in breach of the. And that's and believe you me, these are very, very carefully drafted documents. If you've watched any of Dr. Bill's stuff. you know that these, you know, he covered at great length last Sunday, Saturday. He covered at great length the fact that there were European people writing home saying, "Dear Dread Sovereign, I'm writing to you about what the Americans are up to," and they're writing stuff that there is no way that most of the people can understand it, but believe you me, the people who need to understand it do.
Correct.
The Constitution was a framework for the protection of the rich.
Correct.
That's why there's nothing in there about Indians, women, or black folks.
Well, maybe we have something about the black folks. Talk about that.
Well, okay. Yeah.
The four-fifths, three-fifths, that is.
So. Yeah, yeah, sure. But but those are not, those groups are not even within the consideration of who is free.
No.
You know, the right to vote is predicated upon the ownership of real property.
Right.
There are documents out there in which Revolutionary Era war bonds were bought back at pennies on the dollar, and the signatures of the people doing the buying are lovely quill, you know, pen, free-handed signatures, and the sellers are either X's or thumbprints or both. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
But the other reason Occupy is going to be cracked down on is, and this is something that I work really, really hard to get folks to understand, is because this is empire, and that is what empires do, and that is how empire behaves.
Exactly.
You know, for all the hullabaloo over the Affordable Care Act arguments, this should be a no-brainer. The Constitution says Congress can do it. Congress did it. Go home.
Certainly.
And if there was, if it weren't for the fact that Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia, and Kennedy are raving hypocrites, that would have been the outcome. But they are raving hypocrites, and they talk about the original intent of the framers and all of that malarkey. But when it doesn't suit them, they don't do it. You know, Scalia is one of these Opus Dei Catholics, and I think Thomas is too, and Alito may be, and Roberts may be, and Kennedy may be, for all I know. And they're, you know, they're real severe purists, you know, that's the hair shirt and piece of barbed wire around the leg and flaying themselves and ugh. They don't want nobody taking no birth control now because church teaching. But you know what? They don't apply the same thing to the Constitution.
No. Well, and wasn't Roberts the guy who was saying that he's there just to call the balls and strike?
Yeah, he did that.
In other words,
he and Alito in particular, and we knew that, you know, we don't have to wait for the outcome of this case. We knew with the outcome of the Citizens United decision that he and Alito had committed perjury before the Senate of the United States because they were under oath, I do believe.
Correct. They were.
Yeah.
And according to their testimony, they were going to pay special attention to stare decisis and so forth.
Yeah, that was part of the perjury. That was the perjury.
Yeah.
And when they do whatever it is they're going to do to the Affordable Care Act, anything short of just upholding the daggum thing, they will be perjuring themselves again by their actions.
Correct.
Yeah.
In a way, Bob, I kind of think that they ought to overturn the act and just say, fine, it's Medicare for everybody. Everybody can sign up.
Yeah, they can't do that. They won't. I mean, I guess you could do that, but there'd probably be guns, people with guns in the streets. screaming about their freedom. But as it is, what's going to drive me particularly crazy is if this thing is stricken, you're going to have teabaggers in the streets hollering, free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last, and I'm going to kick furniture. Cossack, I got a roll, brother, but good hearing from you. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Bob.
All right, take care. Our buddy Cossack calling from North Florida. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? And welcome to the program. Oh, I hate it when the lights are blinking there and nobody there when I come to them. You'll have that. So, what a very long, strange week it was. I apologize for the issues on Monday. Had some great conversations, but you'll have that. A reminder, we do operate here by listener contribution, and March is ending, and we are about $800 from our monthly goal. Thank you, John, for your contribution this evening. Thank you for the contributions that have come in over the past couple of days in my absence. Your recognition that things have to go on, even though I'm not necessarily behind the microphone, are much appreciated. Maybe come Monday, even though the story's getting a little stale, we'll talk a little bit more about Cheney's deferment from death. That's six deferments now. Five deferments from Vietnam, five deferments from potential death in Vietnam, and now one more. I'm not going to get started. It'll make me crazy. I do have something here. Our buddy Michael sent this along. He did a little audio work during the course of the program. We talked about the Santorum comment, and what was he saying? He said, I took Frothy's clip, slowed it to 50%, and boosted the audio at the key moment. He's lying again. He said black people last time, even though he claimed that he said blah people. And he said nig this time. End of story. So let's check it out. Here we go.
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war government nig. America was a source for division around the world.
It slows down, but you know what? Even if you slow it down, as Michael did, and you boost the audio, as Michael did, consonants don't change.
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war government, America was a source for division around the world.
I wish there was some way to get that audio over to people with broader reach than I. Because that is nig. And like I said, there's niggardly. I don't think Rick Santorum knows that word. And it is, once he gets around to this particular podcast, I think our buddy Scott in Sweden will probably say, yeah, it's Swedish, and no, Rick Santorum is not Swedish. One last little observation about Rick Santorum. He is constantly harping on the value of his relationship with his immigrant grandfather. Well, here's one last little cultural factoid about life in the mines of Western Pennsylvania. That word was used a lot. So were a number of other ethnic slurs. Hunky. Boho. Any number. Guinea. Dago. Wop. All of them derogatory. And all of them in the common parlance, in the mind culture of mid-century, 20th century Western Pennsylvania. Just worth thinking about. Thank you, Michael, for that little bit of work on the audio. And thanks to you all for hanging out, and your calls and your thoughts. They are genuinely appreciated. We'll come back Monday with more Ann Monday. I have a feeling we won't be without topicality for that. And like I said, just a regular broadcast week as far as I can tell. Monday through Friday. Won't it be nice? And the same thing for the second week as well. So again, thanks. And thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, you, with your kind contributions and the contributions of your time and your energy and your ideas and your thoughts. When you operate on the model that the horn does, we can't go without all of it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee, who sent along that story from St. Louis, that horror story. A horror story with which the rats on the Supreme Court are perfectly happy. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch for all that they do to keep this up and running. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, learn about Coal River Mountain Watch's work. Get the coolest t-shirt in America, Save the Endangered Hillbilly. Join the email list. Contribute if you could. Anything you do over there will be a manifestation of your having joined the fight against the Appalachian apocalypse. And for that, we will all be grateful. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.